Another player my dad said would play for England one day, and that was Lee Barkas.
We're on our way to Wembley. Well, sort of. Hal Robson-Kanu looked to have made himself a cup hero yet again, only for a late penalty to force a replay with Huddersfield. We'll look at how the McDermott revolution is going a month in, plus how the team will cope after the departure of Nick Blackman. All that, plus we name our most random Royals 11s, answer your questions in the mailbag, and preview this week's championship action. Hello and welcome to the Tyler Zen Podcast, episode 80. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of TylerZen.com, and this week I am joined by my trusty compatriots, Mr. Alan West, otherwise known as Westy. Westy, hello.
Hello, everyone.
And Mr. Dave Handbags Harris. Dave, hello.
Good evening.
We continue to boost our audio setup here. We are now on three mics, all looking very nice and professional. We're all looking nice and unprofessional.
It looks amazing. I was just saying, the budget has gone up and up and up. It looks really good. You've done a good job, Wim. Well done.
We're slowly working our way up to slightly less than professional joke of a podcast. We'll get there at the end. But as I said last week, it's still a bit of a learning curve. So do give us your feedback on how the audio is going, if people need turning up or turning down or kicking off the show.
Yeah, let's hope we're not giving them feedback. That's where we are in trouble.
I see what you've done there. And it is, of course, thanks to your generosity as our listeners that we can do that. This week, JGR has pledged his support through our crowdfunding. It's if you'd like to also help out, and you can earn things from a Tylerzen mug to suggesting a pub chat topic to even appearing on this very show. There will be a link enclosed with the podcast up on the Tylerzen. So thank you very much for everyone who's helped us out. But in the meantime, gents, good week. Slowly recovering after Christmas now. Well and truly in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, it's all done and dusted now. Christmas is a long forgotten piece of my memory now.
Decorations all down now.
Oh yeah, they fell down, most of them.
A nice unprofessional job of decorating as well.
Yeah.
Dave?
Roll on Easter.
Got the cream eggs out?
Absolutely.
They're on sale already. You can get them.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, any excuse. And, well, with that mind-blowing open under our belts, it's time to delve into the recap. No championship action. It was the magic of the cup. And we'll look back on Reading's 2-2 draw with Huddersfield after this.
The Tylerhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, Huddersfield 2, Reading 2. Now, this game was far from a classic. In fact, if you'd had the misfortune of sitting through the first half at the John Smith Stadium, Gow Farm, McAlpine, whatever they want to call it these days. Needless to say, I think you'd be asking for your money back. But the game burst into life in the second half. Four goals, including two in the last 5 minutes. Reading falling behind 1-0, only to rally back and take a 2-1 lead before a late Naki Wells penalty, who I think everyone in here said was going to score a goal. Sure enough, he pops up with a last-minute penalty, and we are back to the Medeski next week for a replay. Gents, your initial reaction to this one, did Reading get what they deserved, or do you think they should have gone through?
Based on what I've read and what I've heard and what I've seen, we can be pleased with the draw. First half, very much on the back foot by all accounts, and we made changes at half time. McDermott does have a habit of making positive changes. They tend to have a good effect. Obviously, we went behind, so you know, to come out of it with a draw, even though we've taken the lead after 87 minutes. Once you go behind, you've got to be thinking, get a draw out of this. Kind of mixed emotions in many ways. Taking the lead so late and not actually coming away with our name solely in the fourth round hat. But, you know, 2-2 draw, I'll take it. I'd have taken that before the start.
I tell you what was good about, if you listen to the commentary on Radio Berkshire, Tim Deller's commentary at the end of the match there.
Oh, how we're through.
Typical Tim Deller curse he put on that game, because he said to us, and he fires us into the fourth round. And then he paused and he went, that's if we could last out the next 4 minutes.
Yeah, very important. To be fair, Mark, who was at the game for us, I think tweeted something similar. He was like, Robson-Kanu, Wembley. And sure enough, minutes later it falls down. But Westy, three penalty incidents in the game. Obviously one was given, which Naki Wells put away in the final minute of stoppage time. But before that, Naki Wells himself went over in the box, was booked for diving, which didn't please the home fans. And also Matty Vidra could have had a penalty as well for Reading. He didn't win one. Brian McDermott said the ref got two out of three right. The only one he had a complaint about was Vidra's. Any opinion on those?
I thought, arguably, they could have all been penalties. I thought Naki Wells in another game would have got a penalty and the goalkeeper might well have got sent off. So when he booked him for diving, when he first ran over to him, you thought, oh, he's in trouble here. As soon as the whistle goes, you think this is a penalty, especially away from home. And luckily for us, the referee decided that it wasn't. But another day, maybe it would have been. From things we see the replays, but in real time, if you look at it straight away, I thought, oh, he's in trouble here. He got away with that one. Vidra should have definitely had a penalty. I thought he was definitely clipped. And the one that was given, okay, it might have been, well, it was only just outside the box, I think, maybe. But again, in real time, difficult to see.
Dave, it was a really tired challenge for Oliver Norwood, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just a lazy, dangled leg. And I've played Sunday League and I get absolutely knackered after 90 minutes. I've done that before. You just cannot physically get your leg out of the way. It's a stonewaller. There's no arguments about it. It's just disappointing that it's happened.
Do you think the captaincy had any impact on his performance? Not his best by anybody's ratings or any feedback we've had so far. Mark gave him a 5 out of 10 on Saturday.
No, I think captaincy, it can have an effect on some players, but I think in his case, no, he's just caught on a bad day.
The thing is, Norwood, I mean, if you're playing well and he's got a lot of the ball, that's his game, isn't it? Passing in direct passes and finding feet. And if you haven't got the ball and he's chasing around, then he's not going to get a good mark. It's just the way he plays his game.
I think also, given that he is the water carrier in our side. He's obviously going to be a focal point for opposition. Huddersfield's manager, he's come from Germany. They're renowned tacticians. He's got a very, very good pedigree to him. And there's no reason why he wouldn't have not necessarily singled out, but placed emphasis on Norwood with the ball in particular. Most managers will do that.
Yeah, and obviously his team played with a lot of Huddersfield's players during his time at the club, so they know him well. Mm-hmm. The only other thing I wanted to pick up in terms of team selection, we'll come on to the subs in just a minute, but Jake Cooper and Anton Ferdinand, the preferred pairing, no sign of Michael Hector. There was no real excuse given for his absence. All I can presume is that McDermott's already got one eye sort of on the future. I wanted to keep that pairing together that finished the Bristol City game. Would you be happy to see that go up to Derby? Or do you think either a Michael Hector or a fit again Paul McShane needs to come in?
If McShane's fit, I'm sure he'll play. But Cooper and Ferdinand, I don't mind any combination of all four of them, really. I don't see there's any weakness in any of them.
Is it worth putting Hector back in? Or at this stage, Dave, do you say, well, while we're sort of on the bubble, you give Cooper all the chance you can get?
I think you've got to give Cooper the chance, every single chance that you can get, particularly in big games like Derby. Let's face it, they're riding high. They're a good side. Give them the experience. Give them the experience. You know, Hector's going to go back to Chelsea at the end of the season. And as I say, if McShane's fit, there's the argument there that he's got to come in. You know, we're still pushing for the playoffs, personally. You know, as you know, bit of a quandary, isn't it?
And Cooper put in a fantastic performance against Everton early in the season, so there's no reason to suggest that he can't play well.
He kept Lukaku very quiet, didn't he?
Yeah, there's no reason to suggest he can't play well in a championship, I don't think.
He still looks a little bit clumsy to me. I mean, I watched him quite closely against Bristol City, and I thought he had a very good game. I think he does read the game pretty well, but it's just there's something a bit awkward about him. I don't know whether it's just because of his size or just because he is a bit inexperienced. But
I think it's experience, because we've seen Hector when he first came in. He looked a bit clumsy and a bit too long dwelling on the ball, and even to some extent now he gets caught now and again. So again, with more experience here, he'll become a better player.
I'll pick out the defence, because I thought the first goal was again sloppy, and the amount of sloppy goals running giveaway. I know goals generally either come from amazing bits of skill or errors, that's just the nature of the game, but I thought the fact that Patterson's in so much space to get that header.
Yep.
I think you can lay as much blame on that, haven't on the midfield. There's nobody tracking him either.
Absolutely.
The defence are all set. From what I've seen, the defence, I can see that they're all set, and you've got to rely on midfielders to track your men as well.
Should Habsy be getting beat from there as well?
Not if it's a powerful enough header.
Yeah, I thought it was a good header.
Was it a world-class header there, Westy?
I don't think it's world-class. I mean, no. We've seen world-class headers, and I'm not putting that up there.
We might be facing Mr. World-Class on Tuesday night. We'll come on to him a little bit later. The other thing is, Harold Robson-Kanu obviously given the job of replacing Nick Blackman. Can this be the Howell's breakout? We've got a couple of questions on Howell, but let's keep it to just performance at the weekend. Good enough for you to show that you can lead the line?
He played well. It's one of his better games, and he has had a few good performances this year. Again, we say about HRK all the time, he's got all the attributes. It's whether he brings them to the table all at once. And he can do it, but whether he will do it, only time will tell.
Dave?
What you said?
Oh, well, fair enough. I was going to expand that. In fact, no, do you know what? I'm going to have the Howell Robson-Kanu debate now, because we have been asked about him. Nick says, can we talk about Howell Robson-Kanu? And not as a dig, but despite all the criticism, each manager likes him. Something we don't all see.
I will say this about Robson-Kanu. His work rate has been a lot better since McDermott's been in here. He seems to want to play for McDermott, and if he can, then great.
Well, he's playing for his obviously his international place at Euro 2016 and a new contract. He is out of contract in the summer. Look, I think is what you said, Westy. He is a player that has shown immense amounts of potential. You don't score goals in the Premier League against the sort of teams he scored goals against and the type of goals he scored for Reading as well. He scored some cracking goals. I think back to that Millwall goal in 2011-12. Cracking strike from the edge of the box. One against Peterborough as well, I think he lashed in. He's got all the skills and the attributes. It's about putting them together. And unfortunately, unless you do that on a regular basis, you don't succeed at the very top level.
And he's at the age now where he should be doing it more regularly. He's not a young man anymore.
It will come as no surprise whatsoever to me if he has a cracking second half of the season, gets 10 goals and does really well. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. But again, it's, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You know, we've seen it too many times. We've seen too many false dawns from the lad. He's just got to put it together. And until he does, he's going to get that stick. I'm happy to back him. It's clear he does work hard. He's not a lazy player. He's never been a Drenter. And you saw the sort of work rate that we were missing when he got injured at the same time as Quinn. So I'll give him credit where it's due. I thought it was a well-taken goal. He's got that in his locker. Just needs to put it together.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Fair enough. And then just finally, Matty Vidra. Obviously a player that has inspired much debate over the past few weeks, mostly thanks to the comments of a BBC commentator that we touched on last week. And we have got an email about that, Dave. Come on, later. Someone not very happy about your comments on Matty Vidra. Oh. But we'll save that. But in the meantime, again, Tim Deller, to be fair to him, did say in the commentary how important a goal it was for him. What did you think of the goal he got on Saturday?
Oh, it's a great goal, wasn't it? Lovely touch from a precision ball forward. He's taken on two men. He's taken a bit of a deflection, but sometimes you need that little bit of luck, and finally he's had a little bit of luck. Great goal.
Yeah, it wasn't a huge deflection as well. When I heard the commentary, I said there's been a massive deflection. I thought, no, it wasn't a massive deflection. It just looped up a little bit further than probably would have done, but it wasn't a great deal.
To be fair, again, they're calling it in real time, I suppose. They just have to call it as they see it. But really well-taken goal. Again, and he's a player that, if he scores 10, 15 goals in the second half of the season, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
He's looking like one of those players that will score you a spectacular one and miss a sitter.
Well, he did against Bristol City. Three he missed against there were awful, but we covered that last week. So Reading, they come away with a 2-2 draw. Do you think Reading will see them off in the second leg? Obviously, we'll preview that in next week's show, but feeling optimistic?
Again, I reckon...
Did Huddersfield do anything to scare you?
They're quietly improving Huddersfield, and I think they drew with us 2-2 down here as well, didn't they? Yeah. So they're obviously evenly matched. Could go either way. I reckon extra time and penalties.
They've closed a couple of stands, I noticed, for the replay as well, and it's unallocated seating, so they're not expecting a bumper crowd for this one.
No, they won't get one either.
No, but more than 10,000?
Roughly 10,000, yeah.
I think they'll get 10. Dave? Over under 10?
Under 10. I think you'll probably get about 8.
Yeah. Are you going?
No, I have college on a Tuesday evening, unfortunately. Unless it gets moved for TV for another day.
Yeah. Good luck with that one. Westy, go? No.
It won't get moved for TV. That's for certain.
Looks like I'm not going then, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't decided yet. We'll see.
I'm working, so I can't go. So there we go. We're unprofessional jokes of fans as well. We'll all be there at Wembley, though. This year we will.
Well,
I've kept the date free.
We will.
Kept the date free this year. We're all on board. Right, anyway, that just about covers that. So, again, you can read a full detailed report and player ratings from Mark, who was at the stadium on Saturday to see the game. Just head over to thetarlestend.com. In the meantime, we move on to news bites, including that big bit of transfer news from this week, the departure of one Nick Blackman.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So there is only one place to start. That is the departure of Reading's top goal scorer from the first half of the season. Nick Blackman sold to Derby for what Charles Watts told us on the podcast extra on Friday is a fee believed to be $3 million to start with in instalments and then could rise to $4 million based on various criteria, of which we don't know. I would imagine promotion being one of them and a certain amount of goals the other. So getting $4 million, if you'd said at the start of the season, Dave, we'd get $4 million for Nick Blackman, you'd have bitten your hand off, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. At the start of the season, I would have taken $250,000. Nicky Hammond has pulled it out of the bag again, hasn't he? It's superb, brilliant. 6 months for basically 6 weeks worth of form over 3 years. Can't fault it.
Westy, I spoke to Charles about this on the podcast extra, and he was quite critical of Reading's decision to say, saying it basically waved the white flag for the season. Do you see it that way?
No, I don't see it that way. I think if you look at it, I know football's a business now. If you look at it from a business point of view, he had to be sold because he clearly wasn't going to sign a new contract, else he would have done it. So if they're going to get that sort of money and they reinvest it in another striker, I know there's been a few names linked with them recently,
and you might get someone in who's even better. I used to, when I was a lot younger, I used to worry about players leaving the club, but as you get older and a bit more wiser, you see the amount of players that have left and they're always replaced sooner or later. Yeah.
And how many Reading strikers have left the club and gone on to better things? I mean, you could say Kevin Doyle for a time, Shane Long's obviously done okay, but they were sold, you know, at the peak of their powers and you knew they were going to get sold. Yeah. You look at others, Kitson, not done well, Forster didn't do much after he left, Butler didn't do anything, Cureton didn't do anything, Nogan didn't do anything. Lovell didn't do anything. No.
And like you said, his form's been, it's not been great, and he's had a good run recently and he scored a few goals and his stock was high, and that's the time to sell. And I don't think he'd be missed.
I think it's a below. I think Reading are a weaker squad without Nick Blackman. I don't think you can argue that Reading have got stronger because of this, obviously because they haven't signed a replacement yet. If they go through the rest of the window and haven't signed anyone else, you can't argue that they haven't got weaker in the short term.
No, agreed. But if they do sign somebody else and he comes in and scores 10, 15 goals, and everyone forgets about it. So,
or even, you know, in my opinion, you don't have to spend this money now. If you keep that 3.5-4 million in the bank and you see a better striker come up in the summer that you wouldn't have been able to sign before, that's just as good. Because you look at it, and Reading were 33-1 at the time they sold Nick Blackman to win to get promoted. That's not winning the league, that's get promoted. And how many of us, I know we're all fond of gambleware, but how many of you would really have stuck a tenner on Reading at 33-1? No.
Solid,
not
often. We need to know. Yeah.
Exactly. So, on that basis, you can't blame them for taking the sensible business decision. If Reading were in the top six and this happened, you would seriously be thinking, what are you doing?
Yeah. I'd be a bit arguably, if we'd have been in the top six, you might well have thought, I'll sign a contract anyway. So,
yeah.
It's, again, I don't think they had a lot of choice. I think they had their hands tied, Reading. It was either keep hold of him and let him go for nothing or get rid of him now and try and replace him.
Yeah, and he's gone. Obviously, he's already made his debut for Derby, and his league debut should be against Reading on Tuesday night, which I'm sure we'll see him score.
Yeah, that could change the debate if he scores an hat-trick against
Dave, do you think he's going to celebrate?
Yeah.
Yes.
I really hope he does a really moody one again. Really moody Nick Blackman celebration.
He might not celebrate. He might just give us what he did back in 2013. Give us the old stare. Silent stare.
Yeah.
Might do a Millsy.
No, let's hope he doesn't do a Millsy.
So Nick Blackman has gone, I said, to Derby. There are a few other rumours knocking around, most of which were debunked on Friday, I said, in that podcast extra. You can go there for a full transfer update. The two that we haven't really talked about, we did talk about Connor Washington, but that was before Darren McAntony made his Twitter announcement about transfer updates of his players. Now, he said that he had knocked back bids from former Premier League clubs, one of which we believe to be Reading. It looks like he's trying to steer up a bidding war, and who can blame him? He's obviously got a duty to get the best deal he can for his club. And apparently lots of Championship sides are interested in securing his services. But Reading are in the mix. Would that be a signing you'd be happy with? Obviously a player who came through the ranks with Newport, made a move to Peterborough. A bit like Nick Blackman, really. Hadn't really done very much until this season, and he's gone on a bit of a purple patch.
It's a risk for that kind of money that's being offered, isn't it? Or that's being touted around.
Yeah, $3 million.
That hasn't done it, you know, any higher than League One for, what, 5 months. It's the risk. If the club want to take that risk, then fine, fair enough. But he's got to hit the ground running.
Kind of money. Westy, would you go for a Connor Washington for three and a half million? Or would you prefer that they took a gamble on a bit more of an unproven prospect in Tom Bradshaw, who's been touted at about $1 million?
I've seen a bit of Washington. He looks a sort of big, strong lad. He's obviously a late bloomer as well. And at 23, I think he is, yeah. 23. It's still progress in him, you know. And I think if you look at them sort of players, I mean, Copple was just like signing young and hungry players. He's scoring goals in the league below. There's no reason to suggest he can't score goals in the Championship. And for $3 million, if he does score goals in the Championship, that is a cheap price, really.
I can't see Reading getting into a bidding war, Dave. It's not the way they do things.
It's not our style, is it?
No, I don't think.
I'd be surprised if we see Connor Washington in a Reading shirt.
And the other thing is as well, there's a lot of Championship clubs with money to spend. You look at Benik Afobe, our old friend.
Yeah.
If you had said to me when we watched Benik Afobe play for Reading that one day he'd go for eight figures, I always get this wrong. You go for eight figures. If you said he'd go for 10 figures, I literally would have laughed at you. Eight figures, I had a wry chuckle. But I didn't see him turning into a 10 million pound player, especially because after Reading, he went to Bolton and really didn't do a lot. It's only when he went down to the MK Dons that he caught fire. But credit to Bournemouth, they've gone and spent money.
Well, that's the thing. Another player that was young, obviously had some raw talent, and then he's progressed as time's gone by. And again, that's what you pay for players in their young, early 20s. 10 million if they score on goals in the championship.
Yeah, if anyone accuses Bournemouth of being a little old Bournemouth or a little fairy tale story, please give it a break.
Yeah, stop.
They spent about £25-30 million on players.
Yeah, it's no fluke, is it?
No, not at all. No, but you know what? Credit to them, because Reading were in that position in that January. I know Anton didn't have the funds, and in hindsight, it's probably a good job that we didn't. But if we had signed Sigurdsson and Tom Ince and stayed up, who knows? And I don't think that Reading side was a million miles away with the form they were on. If they had kept that momentum going with a couple of signings, who knows? But that's another story for another day. So, yeah, Connor Washington and Tom Bradshaw both linked. The other one is a much more familiar name, one Stephen Sidwell, who has been linked with a loan return to Reading. Fulham also in the frame, another of his old clubs. Stoke apparently want rid, but they don't really want to pay a lot of his wages. So that seems to be the sticking point right now. The other sticking point for me, Dave, is that Brian McDermott's openly come out and said, I don't want any more loans. I've got six at the moment. Is it worth adding a seventh with one Mr. Sidwell?
Depends on what he can offer. What is he, 33, 34 now?
Yeah, just turned 33.
If he can offer a similar level of drive and aptitude as he did 10 years ago, then I don't think you could really argue that it would be worth having another loan. Bad luck to those two players then who don't make the matchday squad. Work harder. But as I say, as ever, as you say, finances will dictate whether or not he comes, if indeed there's any strength in the rumour.
A couple of tweets on the Sidwell thing. We've got from Charles Dapper, who says, think Sidwell coming back is a bad idea. He was great for us, but they always say, he was great for us, always say he's what we missed in the second season. Don't really...
A bit of a contradiction.
Sorry, Charles, I just read that through and it doesn't make a lot of sense. But anyway...
I think what he's saying is that when we sold him, that's what we missed, that's why we got relegated.
Yeah, but then he's also saying it's coming back is a bad idea.
Yeah, well, he's suggesting that was a long time ago, I think.
Well, quite possibly. I think that's what he's going for, but it's a bit unclear. But sorry, Charles, anyway, if I've missed out a few words or something, there might have been a second tweet that I've forgotten. Matt Feline says, what do you think of the rumours of Sidwell coming back on loan? Good idea or never return to an old club? And Brian Davis also said, while he'd bring Premier League quality to the team, I question if centre mid is a position of need.
No, don't bring him back.
No?
No, he must be well past his prime by now. He was a great player for us back in the day, but no. I don't see the benefit of having Sidwell here when you've got so many midfielders that can do a job anyway.
I disagree. I think that we lack that box-to-box midfielder at the moment. I think you've got Danny Williams, who does a good job at it. But beyond that, not really got anyone. And I think you would look, when you're protecting a league, bringing on someone like a Steve Sidwell or going to a tough away game, I think it would be brilliant.
I've said previously that I thought Danny Williams was arguably and potentially the best all-rounded midfielder that we've had since Sidwell. And that was, what, a year, 18 months ago? We've had him, what, 2 years, 2.5 years now? I do think that, you know, Williams, he hasn't really kicked on as I was hoping. In fact, if anything, I think he's just kind of stagnating a little bit. Maybe just get him in on loan, just to give Williams a kick up the backside. I don't know. Bit of an expensive one, that.
I think it'd be good for someone like a Tish Boller as well in the academy. I think having someone like that around Chadwick, and also just on the pitch, get another leader. And it's something we've harped on about all season on this podcast. Reading lack leaders, and Sidwell's not going to be someone that's going to take his teammates shirking around. He's not going to take Lucas Piers and not track him back if he's on his flank, is he? He's going to turf him out.
Ultimately, I think the only way we're going to sign him, I think, you know, all told, is if McDermott has plans or there are circumstances in the offing that sees other central midfielders going out either on loan or permanently.
See, I don't even think that, because I think they've only... I know Quinn's a centre midfielder, but he's not really been played there, so you really sort of only left with three, and that's, you know, well, Alex Fernandez, who just doesn't seem to be anywhere really near the team, does he?
Not really, no. Hector's played in midfield as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see the benefit of bringing Sidwell back at the age he is now. It's not the same Sidwell we had. Let's remember that.
In terms of the never returns to an old club, I mean, we've had this debate when Brian came back. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Jermaine Defoe went back to Spurs, did a good job. Robbie Keane went back to Spurs, did a good job.
It all depends on the player and their attitude of them, you know what I mean? I don't think it really matters if you get players back. It just depends what state they are when you get them back. It's like buying back an old car. It might still run, but do you really want it?
Well, people point at the Kitson and Little examples from that 08-09 season, how they weren't the same players. It's not, I don't think it's quite the same coming back quite so soon after that. I think there was and the team was all over the place when they came back as well. This would be like a new. So it's not even really coming back because you're bringing in a completely different player to the one you left behind.
Yeah.
He left in 2007. We're sat here in 2016.
It's a long time ago.
Exactly. So I'm all for it, but again, I can't see it happening on a loan. Maybe they could work out a deal. I wouldn't be against selling around an 18-month deal, but we'll have to see how that pans out. Obviously, you can stay tuned to thetylersend.com. We'll bring you any news as we get it. A couple of confirmed deals. Dominic Samuel has gone out on loan again. He's gone back to Gillingham for an initial month. Could be longer. I think Reading are just keeping their options open, really, seeing if they do bring in another striker. I think their plan will be if they do get a Washington or a Bradshaw or a Bradley Dack from Gillingham, then obviously, you know, Samuel will be allowed to stay. If not, they'll bring him back and see what he can do. Likewise, Craig Tanner, he's had his loan extended at Plymouth at the end of the season. He's doing well down there. He's well-liked. He seems to like it down there as well, and it's the best place for him. Again, he's not really, with such a packed forward department, well, especially because he's more of a winger, he's not really a forward. It didn't really make sense to bring him back. So, any disagreements?
No, I can't disagree with any of that, no. Again, Samuel, I thought they might have had a look at him for a month and then sent him back out, but no.
No, and that is just about it. That wraps up News Bites for this week. We'll move on now to our pub chat.
The Tylehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetylehurstend.com.
Right, well, we covered the transfer window in depth in last week's pub chat, so we thought we'd go on to something a bit more fun. And speaking of, you know, keeping it slightly transfer themed anyway, this week, Westy, you came up with a pub chat topic, so I'll allow you to frame it.
Well, what we used to do quite a lot of was like 11s, Reading 11s, and I like to do sort of retro stuff because I know there's sort of a lot of older fans listen to us. And I know, especially as a guy who works with me, listens every week, Phil Sawyers, who loves the retro team. So what we decided to do this week was a team that you barely remember. So we want you to be able to remember them, but barely. So there could be any name from 1990 onwards to the present day. They obviously made appearances for Reading. Maybe some have made quite a few, maybe some have made hardly any. But we want to see if you can remember these players and our memories of them.
Yeah, the best gauge is this, if you sit there going, oh yeah.
That's it.
That's the reaction.
That's what I've done with one out
of. Yeah, we were discussing some of these before we went on air. So we've used up most of our oh yeahs. But anyway, we'll rattle them off. So Westy, as you came up with the topic, I'll let you go with your team first.
What we do, just my whole team, yeah?
Yeah, go for it.
Right, well, I had a bit of a dilemma in goal because I think you will remember both of these players, but especially the one I'm going to say first, who was going to be my number one. You remember him more for his training activities more than his fact that he actually had a game for Reading, and that is Sal Bibbo.
Yeah.
Now, I challenge anyone to tell me a game they watched with Sal Bibbo in goal. Even handbags are struggling.
Sheffield Stoke, United?
Stoke City at home, 96-97, 2-2 draw.
There we go. One game. Right, brilliant. the other one was Graham Stack. Now, the reason I'm saying Graham Stack is I think everyone remembers him, but I think he probably played about 12 games and any shot that was on target went past him. I never remember him making a save in 12 matches.
He was the regular League Cup goalkeeper for the 106 team, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, yeah. Right, I got a back four of Tony Barris. I don't know if anyone remembers him. It was like 99-2000 side. They signed
on
him
loan?
Not yet, no.
Or was it permanent? Oh, was it from York?
They had him on loan, yeah. They, I think they signed him.
They signed him from York?
Signed him permanently from York, 98-99, and then sold him in the summer to Walsall.
And he signed... He played in one of the biggest games in York's history. Their 3-0, I think it's League Cup or FA Cup win over Man United.
League Cup.
Where Graham Murty also played in it as well.
He did.
And Tony Barris scored in that game, obviously. Yeah,
there you go.
Graham Murty scored against Everton later on in the competition as well.
He did. It was a good run that year, wasn't it, for York City? I didn't think we'd bring York City into the conversation, but even so.
A couple of years later, they would go on to knock us out of the FA Cup every year.
Yeah.
We'd sign their best two players, yeah. Then we had Steve Brown. Now, Steve Brown was playing for Charlton. I think he had like 250 appearances for him. He was there forever. And he was an old teammate of Alan Pardew's. And Reading signed him. He made 47 appearances for Reading with one goal. I don't know who that was against.
Bristol Palace.
Well done. Adey Whitbread. I think they had him on loan. And then they signed him permanently from West Ham. 30 appearances for Reading.
Yeah, the story with him. Signed him on loan initially. And... When Pardew signed him on loan, they sort of saw assurances from the Football League because they knew that the loan would expire before the playoffs ended. And they sought assurances from the Football League that they would be able to extend should Reading reach the playoffs. Of course, it got to loan termination and we reached the playoffs. Went to the Football League and say, right, we want to extend it. And they turned around and said no, and it really hacked Alan Pardew off.
I'm sure it did.
So he didn't play in the playoff final.
The other one I had at the back was Gareth Davis. I think most of us remember him.
Gareth Davis, Ginger Ninja.
He was the Ginger Ninja, signed from Crystal Palace for, we discussed it off air, 175,000.
He was one of the outcasts under Tommy Burns, wasn't he?
He was.
Along with Stuart Lovell, I think
Steve Swales, Andy Legg, Jason Bowen, Carlos
Saba.
I don't think he was outcast, but he didn't rate him, did he?
I mean, of all those players you just rattled off, do you think he had a problem with Welsh players? Because that was three of them out of the five.
Ooh, maybe.
Good question. Anyway, centre midfield, Neil Smith. Now, this was one of the players that I looked at and I thought, oh yeah, I remember Neil Smith, but I had to drag my memory banks back to remember him, even though he made 64 appearances, scoring 4 goals. And then there was Gamble Aware, Joe Gamble.
Hey.
7 Diamond. Appearances. I think he came through, he bought him from York. Cork City. Scott Davis. I think he was abandoned pretty early. I think he played about 5 games for Reading.
Yeah, it was dumped on the scrap heap by Rodgers, but then he had a few issues with his attitude, mentality, and just recently actually there's been a local newspaper article in the local Crawley Rag.
That we reported on the Tarleton as well.
Yeah, he had gambling problems.
Yeah, he's got involved with card schools, but thankfully he's sort of turned his life back around and he's going around talking to Premier League clubs about it, so good for him.
Yep, well done. Play to him.
Another player, my dad said, would play for England one day, and that was Lee Barkas. And then he made 17 appearances for Reading, so that never happened, as we all know. The other player, he played nearly 100 games for Reading, but he was one of those players that I thought, oh yeah, I remember Lee Hodges. I think they signed him from...
Barnet,
yeah. And he went to score 10 goals for us in the league. And a player that I think we all know for his cult status, really, but some of the younger fans might not know him, Uwe Hartenberger. I think he's our only German player we've ever signed. If you don't count,
I remember Uwe getting subbed off after he'd been subbed on in a game once, and this was back when he only had 2 subs, yeah. So he had to do something really bad to get subbed off again.
And he scored his debut against Swans. I think that's what everyone remembers about him. He scored an equaliser right at the death on his debut
at Swansea. Yeah, from a cute angle, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good goal as well.
It was a very good, very tidy finish. We signed it from Bayer Erdingen.
Yep.
Who incidentally, as a youth team player or youth player, I played against.
Do you know how much I paid for him? Do you remember
Uwe? Don't know, 20 grand?
A couple of 100,000, wasn't it?
100,000.
Really?
What a bargain.
That's quite a lot of money, though. That was third tier.
And if you look at the amount of goals he scored in Germany, he's prolific. I mean, I know it wasn't top level, but...
it's far from top level, trust me. I played against him.
So that was it. That was my 11. Hopefully some people out there remember him.
Having said that, it's far from top level, but in the same league, I did play against Sebastian Deisler as well.
Yeah, there you go. Did you get the better of him?
No.
Ah, well.
Was he on the way up or on the way down?
Very much on the way up.
Oh, was he? Oh, well done.
What about you?
Very much
on the way up or the way down?
Oh, Christ, I was only about 13 and yeah, I was already on the way down.
Peaked.
I like the fact that he said earlier that he used to get tired in the 90th minute. I thought probably more like the 9th minute.
I get tired just walking to my seat these days. Get alone how to get out onto the pitch. Dave, before you said Steve Brown. Am I losing my mind or was there another Steve Brown that we got on loan from West Ham? Or is that a right back?
Yes, there was. He was another player I needed to put in a team. Was it Steve Brown? It was definitely something Brown, wasn't it?
Kenny Brown.
That's it.
2 loan periods. 95,
he was really
96,
good.
96, 97.
He was really good. I always really liked him.
Steve. Yeah, I thought about putting him in there, but again, you know, with my 11, I've looked at players who Reading fans might know, but opposition fans may not know. So okay. I know, and I'm going to sort of spoil yours a little bit here, but I know you've got Steve Blatherwick down.
Yeah,
he played over 200 games for Chesterfield, so I considered him, but then dumped him because he played at Chesterfield.
That's fair enough. Okay, so, let's get into your team.
Let's get into my team. So, goalkeepers, a choice of 4 I had. I had Steve Sutton, Eric Nixon, John Keeley, all of whom who had short loan appearances. But I got pumped for Danny Honey because he had 1 appearance in the FA Cup against Slough Town, 2-1 win, 91-92, I believe. And then was never seen for Love Nor Honey.
Hey.
Right back, I've gone Byron Glasgow. Even though he was more of a midfielder, more of a wing back type player, he kind of fits.
That's a really FIFA move, that is. I'll just stick the winger at full back, use the pace.
We're going 4-4-2, but Byron Glasgow. 12, 15 appearances for Reading before failed a drugs test and was dumped.
Silly boy, really, because he was just starting to get a regular game.
And, he was. And he was a tidy player as well. Very, very, very tidy player. Scored 1 goal, I think, up at Notts County. Unfortunately, his illegal habits got the better of him. Left back, hopefully this will give you reaction. Alex Smith.
Yeah.
Signed by
from
Alan...
Fulham?
Alan Pardew from Port Vale.
That's it.
He played regularly for the first half of that 0-1-0-2 season, scored some absolute belting goals as well. I seem to remember one at Notts County in a 4-3 win. Scored a couple of other goals, a couple of other efforts, and it kind of got dumped out of the team, didn't he, for Nicky Shorey?
It's not a bad player to get dumped out.
Yeah, that's a poor decision.
Strange at the time. It was very strange at the time. You know, who's this, you know, young kid that we bring in it? But obviously, you know, Pardew knew better. And Shorey obviously stood the test of time. But Alex Smith didn't do anything wrong, really. He got a championship runners-up medal, and then kind of flitted away.
Did he go to Notts County from Reading?
No, he went to Shrewsbury on loan, I believe.
Okay.
Played for them. I think he might have signed permanently. I can't remember exactly where he went. Anyway, centre backs, a few options. I've gone for Leo Roger, one appearance wonder against
ITV Digital
on a Thursday night. How we complained about Thursday night football back then.
Is that the game? I nearly picked him as my keeper. That Frank Talia was on the bench for Reading as well.
I believe so. Yes,
I don't think Talia actually played a game for us. He doesn't qualify for this.
Doesn't qualify.
No. So yeah, 0-0 draw. Three sendings off. Nicky forced a goal disallowed for offside that wasn't offside. Thursday night, ITV Digital, yada yada yada. Other centre back, Peter Mate.
Yeah, he was on my list as well.
He didn't make a league appearance though, did he?
He made a League Cup appearance.
League Cup.
And
yeah.
Punched the ball in the net for a last minute equaliser.
Against Darlow.
Against Darlington. Yeah. He's actually very unfortunate. I went to the reserve game against Chelsea at Aldershot that he did his cruciate ligament in, and it looked serious at the time. But having said that, he was given a proper runaround by Darlington's force. I think one of which was Julian Joachim, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a bit of a big old unit.
Did he get a hat trick that night?
Joachim. Scored twice.
Twice.
Scored twice. Yeah.
Hungarian, wasn't he? I seem to remember.
Joachim?
No.
Mate. Oh, Mate. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
I swear to Joachim played for the under-21s.
Season long loan from Debrecen, who he actually played Champions League football as well, Peter Mate, in the end. So. Read into that what you will. More about Hungarian league than him,
yes,
I suppose.
There's more about that league.
Left mid, Alex Haddo.
Yes.
Couple of appearances, sub appearances. He was a youth team product. I quite liked him. I saw him play once against Brentford, came off the bench in a 4-0 win. Curitan's first hat trick for us. Right mid, I've gone a slightly unknown Tommy Burns loanee. Nobody remembers when I mentioned his name. Andy Wright.
No. Yeah.
One appearance, full appearance in an auto windscreen shield match down at Bournemouth, 2-0 defeat, and a couple of substitute appearances, one of which I think was against Lincoln City, which Massar and Neil Clement scored. He didn't exactly set the world alight, and was very quickly back on his heels, back up the Leeds, who we loaned him off. Centre midfielders, Jimmy Crawford.
Oh yeah, very often everyone remembers Jimmy Crawford.
Not a very good player. He has been quoted as saying that he looked at the 2 years after he signed for Shelbourne. As being thoroughly injury hit and didn't really get into his stride as a complete waste. I looked at his record and the previous 2 years before he signed those, he was at Reading. He scored one goal against Bristol City, turned out to be the winner on the opening day of the season, but sadly didn't really set the world alight.
How many times did he play for Reading? Did you see that?
About 20.
Yeah.
Really?
Tommy Burns signed him, wasn't he? Tommy Burns bought him from Newcastle.
Yeah, he was one of the magnificent seven, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, not too magnificent, but yeah.
Yeah. Other centre mid, another Tommy Burns signing from Kilmarnock, Mark Riley.
Yeah, he was on my list as well.
Yeah, yeah. I remember him.
Homesick for Scotland. Couldn't handle Berkshire.
Kind of gone against the whole known elsewhere element here, but. Because he was very well known and respected up at Kilmarnock. Came down for, I think it was a nominal fee, played four games, stunk the place out, said he was homesick, went back up to Kilmarnock for what we paid for him, and continued his career in Scotland.
It's too warm down here, he said.
Possibly. Centre forwards, Michael Murphy.
Good old Mick Murphy.
One sub appearance. Against Bristol City, 94-95. I think he came on for the aforementioned Uwe Hartenberger.
Oh, the great.
I think he might have broken a bone in his foot or something like that in that game. But either way, he came on for his only sub-appearance. Contributed to a last-minute winner for Michael Jilks. Where have we seen that one before? And the other centre-forward, a loanee in 91-92. And I have to say, I looked at this earlier and I just thought, who? Because I'd never heard of him before.
Did you dig out the Rothmans?
It was similar. It was the old soccer base.
Okay, yeah.
Jerry Britton.
Never heard of him. It's before my time, but I've never heard of him.
91-92, it's just in my time. 91-92, two appearances on loan from Celtic. Obviously a Mark McGee effect there. I could tell you absolutely nothing else about him.
Yeah.
No, again, I don't remember him at all. No. So he must have been good. No.
Okay, it's good. It's a good team. Have you got any other names to bring up?
So considerations, as a left back, Yuri Travner. I still wonder why and who now.
Too recent for me. People still remember he stunk up the place.
Yeah, yeah. Peter Castle,
youngest ever Reading player.
The one appearance wonder at Watford. Michael Dobson, one substitute appearance in 05-06 against Stoke. Got Darren Campbell, who also came on alongside Peter Castle at Watford. Omar Daly.
Yeah, I see Omar Daly.
Yeah, a few sub appearances when Pardew was in charge, and then Koppel and took over, and he was never seen again.
I see him play against, I think it was against Crystal Palace. He appeared for Reading. I remember being at a match and seeing Omar Daly come on for the last 20 minutes, and thinking, "Oh, we got a superstar here," and then we didn't.
Curtis Asano, one substitute appearance again against West Brom in the cup when Leiters
former youth team captain Curtis Asano.
Yeah, you've got a couple of others there in centre mid. Sekou Baraji.
He set up that goal against Sheffield United, though, so I think that establishes his name in folklore. Yeah.
Thomas Sivka.
Yeah, we remember Thomas Sivka getting a penalty.
Against Bristol City, which I think, did Roberts miss that?
Roberts missed it and scuffed in the
rebound. No, because he scored the one earlier in the game. I don't know if Roberts took the second one, because the second one was missed.
Yeah, it was missed.
And I can't think if Roberts took it or someone else took it.
I think he went off the pitch, didn't he, Roberts?
Was it Ian Hart took it and missed it?
Yeah, it was.
Anyway, there's one for you to write in about.
Yeah.
Anyway,
a couple of other names, just quickly. Centre forwards, Nicholas Bignall. Two goals and four appearances, something like that. Eric Abina, Chuck Quinielli.
Yeah, 05-06 as well, wasn't it?
05-06 as well. Yeah, Mark Nichols, 99-2000, scored Reading's first goal.
From Chelsea Loney, was he?
From Chelsea, yeah. And last but not least, Gunnar Thorvaldsen.
Yeah, he's on my list as well. I thought he was never given a fair shake, but oh well.
Brian, you can't score Brian sitters, like then bad luck, really.
we don't know how right out of Iceland otherwise, so
we have. My list, Eric Nixon, was the goalkeeper for me, obviously made that one appearance in the League Cup for Reading in that defeat to Leeds. Nicky Colgan also popped into my head as we were talking about that.
He popped into my
head
as well.
Awful goalkeeper.
He was poor.
On loan.
He went up to Scotland as well, didn't he, afterwards, Nicky Colgan?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Hibernian.
Fullbacks, Alan Mabry, who I think got sent off against Leeds.
Yep.
Man City.
Was it Man City?
Yep.
Paddy Kelly, another one of the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, he was unfortunate. Very, very unfortunate. I remember the game against Middlesbrough. He was actually a very cultured central defender. He really impressed a lot of people at Reading and played in this game against Middlesbrough, and they had the likes of Marco Branca, Paul Gascoigne, Paul Merson. Yeah, they romped, well, one of three teams romping the league that year. And Craig Hignett, who had received a barrel load of stick from earlier in the season, scoring, having the temerity to score the goal that knocks out the League Cup.
Cheating.
Yeah, cheating.
Put in an absolutely horrendous challenge on him in the last 5 minutes or so. Sent off for it, but seriously injured Paddy Kelly. I don't think he ever really recovered from it.
No. My other defenders, we both mentioned, Steve Blatherwick, who was a loanee, I think, in 96-97, and Peter Maite, who we've also brought up. Mark Riley was in my team as well. This one, I think this even got you, Dave, or nearly got you, because you still know who he was. He's currently an assistant manager at Stoke, Mark Bowen. The man who follows Mark Hughes around everywhere, made one appearance for Reading in the Auto Windscreen Shield. Now, the only reason I know Mark Bowen isn't because I remember that game, is because I think it's Championship Manager 99-2000. He always popped up in Reading squad.
Yes.
And I was like, who's this lad? I never remember him playing for Reading. I just sell him straight away. And he's like 36.
Yeah,
his last legs.
One appearance. He was on trial. And I think back then, well, clearly back then you could play players who were on trial in that particular competition. He played against Leighton Orient in a game that Andy Bernal scored. We didn't follow it up. One appearance, very nondescript.
Yeah, I think we ended up getting Keith Jones shortly afterwards, I think, to fill the old man centre midfield role.
There's another one, Keith Jones.
Yeah.
That's one I forgot about.
He always got more stick than he deserved, did Keith Jones.
Steady.
I thought so.
Steady.
Because he wasn't Phil Parker.
They had a lot of, in fact, speaking of assistant managers, that was a period they had a load of current assistant managers. They had Peter Grant in as well, who's had a few decent spells. Obviously, Pards himself. Pards almost qualified as a player, didn't he? Because he played a fair few times for the reserves. I don't think he actually made a... Did he might have played for the first team in a friendly.
Possibly. He certainly played... memory might be deceiving me here. I think he played in one of the two testimonials we had back end of the last season at Elm Park for Michael Jilks and... what's the groundsman's name? Fred Neek.
Yeah. Brendan Rodgers obviously coming through the youth team as well. Didn't make a senior appearance, but he could have been on there. And as our current number two, Chris Davis, who apparently was on our youth books. So there you go. And other players, Alan Carey, Irishman up front. Again, I think he played a handful of games in between 93 and 95. Andy McLaren, who's you may remember for his off-field misdemeanours.
Yeah, he wasn't here long either, was he?
No. And another one I've just added in late doors, Mark McKeever.
Oh,
who we got alone.
I saw his face.
Yeah.
He scored a couple of goals in a memorable win at Stoke, and apart from that, he didn't do much.
He scored down at Bournemouth as well.
Yeah.
Once, and then, didn't really do much else. But having said that, he also played for Bristol Rovers, that season in their 6-0 win.
I'm going to throw in another really random one that I still can't believe he actually played for Reading. Jason Yule.
Oh, yeah, Jason Yule. How many games did he play? One?
He came on loan, didn't he? Or am I thinking of the other Charlton striker? I'm going to have to double check this now.
You're thinking Kevin Lisby.
Yeah, Lisby.
Ah, that's it.
Lisby.
Yeah, sorry, I rescind that.
He was
so unknown, he didn't actually play for us.
Yeah, he was still knocking around.
Kevin Lisby.
He scored a hat-trick against Liverpool, didn't he?
I know, unbelievable.
Yeah. Just thinking of a couple of other names off the top of my head. Didn't really play much in the league. There's more sort of auto windscreen shieldy type players. Mark Holtzman?
Anyone? Yes.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah.
Defender when he right back or something.
When I first saw his name on the squad sheets, I thought I just assumed he was German.
Mm.
Robert Codner?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember him.
Can we include all of the Wallaces that ended up playing for Reading as well?
Robert Codner.
Rob Codner.
There's another player.
Darren McCants?
No.
That was one that was mentioned to me earlier by a certain John Keane. I'm not sure. I couldn't even tell you what position he played.
Okay. Well, I'm going to wrap this up here because we could go on for a long time. We've done 20 minutes. But yeah, I'm sure there are some really obscure players we've forgotten. And this is where you come in. Tweet us into @thetarlhurstend. You can get in touch on the Facebook page, facebook.com/tarlhurstend, or send us an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. If you can make one of us go, oh yeah, then you've done your job this week. And if you want to send in your own obscure 11s, we'll read them out. So get your thinking caps on. And so a big thank you to everyone who's got in touch with us for this week's mailbag, which we'll come on to now.
Tony Whittle.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetarlhurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
So again, thank you to everyone who has got in touch for the mailbag this week. We'll start with the email address, which is thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, and this comes from Tom
Wisniewski.
Yeah, I'm just allowing you to pronounce it these days because I'm not going to have a go. So Tom, if we've butchered your name, it's the sort of unprofessionalism that you come to expect on this podcast. Anyway, he sends a lengthy email, so I'm going to get through it as quick as I can. He says, hello guys, yet another January is upon us and the rumour mill is in full throttle with likes of Washington, Bradshaw, Kermigan and Sidwell amongst many more names thrown around. I think we all know where we need to strengthen. I believe we need to see Sarr and Vidra in a partnership to make an informed decision on whether a further striker is bought. Seeing transfer targets along with our own on loan player scoring goals is extremely frustrating. In my opinion, a good fix would be to focus on strikers, the defender and look for a new goalkeeper coach. Besant is simply not good enough for this level. More pub landlord than championship goalkeeping coach. I would like to pick up on the Vidra discussion on the last podcast. I know myself and Handbags have clashed on Twitter before, but I couldn't agree with his points and comments on what Tim Deller said on air. Vidra is a proven goal scorer, championship player of the year and 2030 range goal of season player, no doubt. However, that was for Watford, not Reading. As a club, we've spent £2.5 million on a loan. Yes, a loan player. Therefore, as a result, people expect to see a certain type of player. So far, what I've seen is a player that simply runs around, has made one good tackle to result in a goal. Yes, Huddersfield was a well-taken strike, but it was frustrating seeing such little input for such a fee. It'll be a case of will he now improve all his efforts into coming games, constantly defying the one swallow doesn't make a summer statement he's been labelled with. It's no coincidence that when Rowan Libbard comes on, he'll put his all into the game due to his desire and fire to play. I simply don't see that in Vidra. I'd rather have a Libbard, Samuel, and if signed, a Washington or Dak to play in the team. At least you'll see passion, fire and desire, something we as fans sadly haven't seen since the efforts of Mackie up top last season. His comments aside upon rejoining QPR, he showed desire, and that lifted the crowd. We're not seeing that at the moment. Our midfield is solid, but for backup out wide, I'd like to see a bid for Jason Cummings to come in. He'd be a perfect backup for McCleary. If rumours are true, I'd like to see Sardes also. Another zippy winger that would add attacking pace, which, when utilised, would look dangerous and sure of scoring. Love the cast, as always. Take care, Tom. Whew. There you go. Thank you very much, Tom.
Epic. Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Dave, obviously, we'll start with you. He disagreed with your disagreeing with Tim Deller.
Yeah, fair enough. Not got any issues with that whatsoever. All I'd say in response is, his initial point, you've got to play Sarr and Vidra up front together. Absolutely right. I don't disagree with that whatsoever. However, I don't see that Vidra, certainly since McDermott's taken over, I don't see that Vidra's not putting in the effort.
Yeah, very much agree. 100% agree.
You know, ultimately, what you've got to look at is the way that he's been utilised. And as you alluded to, I think it was last week, when you look at what Troy Deeney has been writing on Twitter, almost every single time he plays, or every single time Vidra plays, we're not playing the balls into the channels for Vidra to run onto. We're not playing in the right way, therefore you're not seeing the results. But that's not to say he's not putting in an effort. Vidra, we knew when we signed Vidra, he could be perceived to be a sulky player, someone who gets disheartened very quickly. We knew that. Why is it coming in as a surprise? You know, £2.5 million doesn't change that. Ultimately, what it comes down to me is that McDermott's got to find a way to get the best out of him. I don't believe we've seen the best of him. Absolutely not. But having, to turn around and say that he hasn't put the effort in, certainly over the last 5 to 6 weeks, I think bang wrong. Yeah, hence the reason why I disagreed so vehemently with Tim Deller.
Yep, fair enough. Right, we'll move on then to Notorious. He says, thoughts on our away form lately? Seems to be pretty poor when we leave the Madstad. And he followed that up by pointing out that Bristol City away was our last league win. So what is up with our away form lately?
It's funny, really, because over the last couple of seasons, it's been really good away from home and poor at home. So it just seems to have turned around a little bit.
Dave, anything you can point your finger on?
Recently, we've been... Some people would call it unlucky. Some people would call it, you get what you deserve. I'd call it on the unlucky side. Wolves, we absolutely should have got something from that game.
Definitely.
You can go right back to the Fulham debacle. You get a 2-0 up. Yeah, Fulham score goals, but you're 2-0 up and you're controlling the game.
That's where it went wrong, really, that Fulham game.
Ultimately,
ridiculously,
we was cruising and then we lost the match, and since then we've been struggling to win away from home.
You know, I think the only game... I may well be corrected. This is exactly what I was going to say. Forest is the only game where we have been truly, well and truly beaten. Otherwise, we've been well in games. Preston wasn't exactly a stunning performance, but we had the chances to get something out of that.
Hull was very unlucky.
Yeah, again, exactly. But the thing is, there's too many games we can point at where we were unlucky. It was just not good enough. As simple as that. You can have the odd game away from home that you were unlucky and you get beat, but we've just pointed out 4 or 5 games off the top of our head. If you keep losing away games, you're just not good enough to win them. Simple as that.
Fair enough. And I've slammed the table down on that.
Yeah, this is a good way of doing
emphatic.
It.
Emphatic. Right, so thanks to Taurus. He's one of the lads responsible for the Away Day video series server. You like those on Tarleton? That is him. Go check those out. They did their year in review recently. And our favourite benefactor, listener, patriarch, patron saint of this podcast, and Hulk lover, Valdemar Janoszak. He says, very few players could have scored the type of goals that Blackman has scored this season. I would have so loved to see a few more before the season's end. And he also sent another tweet with a video of his strike at Rotherham. To be fair, he has scored a number of screamers this season.
Yeah, again, if you let him shoot on his left foot, you're in trouble. I think I've learned that pretty quickly, but it still ain't stopping it a lot of teams. If you let him have a shot, even a free kick with his left foot, it is like a hammer. So, he has scored some great goals. But the thing is, we were talking about Vidra just a second ago. If Vidra starts scoring some tap-ins, then we'll be winning games. And he's missed quite a few recently. And the good thing about Vidra is, again, you can't knock his work rate. I think it's been fantastic over the last couple of weeks, especially. If he can start scoring these tap-ins that he's been getting in the positions to score, then you'll forget about Blackman pretty quickly.
Yeah, those type of goals are great. And, they will live long. And, fingers crossed for him as a professional, he goes on to fill his potential. I just didn't much like him as a player. I'm not going to look out. Well, I'm going to look out for how he does in a simple, how's he getting
this
on
this week, but, especially.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to miss him. Might miss his goals. Yeah, but
it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, I would have liked to see a few more for this. Then don't get me wrong. If Nick Blackman had stayed here and scored 15 goals, got us to a playoff final and promotion, I'd have been the first to go and shake his hand and say, "I was wrong. Thank you very much, Nick." go off and with my best wishes. But as we said earlier, it was the right business deal to be done. And we'll just have to see how it pans out in the next couple of windows.
Yeah, you just hope that someone else takes up the mantle. I mean, if Saar's not scored for months, if he was to start putting the ball in again, everyone forgets about it.
Mm. Andy Walker's making an early claim for our next year's favourite listener award by saying, thought the Tyler's End podcast sounded absolutely awesome this week. Little too professional for my taste, perhaps. Hashtag overspend. So thanks for that, Andy. Your tenner's in the post.
Yeah.
Sam Richards. No, thank you very much, Andy. Sam Richards says, from the list below or others, which ex-player would you take back? I'm just going to keep it to this list. Shane Long, Steve Sidwell, Anna Federici, Matt Mills, Jimmy Kebbe, Alex Pearce, Jem Karachan, or Liam Rossignol.
Long.
I'd have Long in a heartbeat.
And I was one of the first ones to say I'd drive him out of the club, and I changed my mind pretty rapidly. But yeah, Long could still come and do a really good job, and if not, an excellent job.
Long, then Federici for me, just because the current goalkeeping situation. Dave, any change to that?
Long, Federici, and I know we debated him quite a lot earlier. Steve said, well, I would have him back.
I would also, as much as I hate to say it, and I think he's a bit of a cretin, Matt Mills as well.
Kebbe, where is he?
He's just given up. You always knew he didn't really have a massive passion for football. No, he got that big Premier League contract from Crystal Palace. And that's it. That set him up.
He's another one of those players that come out of obscurity, had a couple of good seasons, and is basically retired on it.
Yeah. You look at his last efforts for Reading. They were fantastic until he got injured in the back end of that 2012-13 season. He was a bigger part of that revival as any player.
Yeah, if Kebbe played well, Reading won.
His win ratio was... his points to game ratio was ridiculous. When Kebbe played, Reading generally got something out of the game.
If he's on it, he was brilliant. I mean, I don't think he knew what his legs were doing half the time, but he was so quick, and especially counter-attacking football, he was unplayable sometimes.
That goal he scored against Leicester is easily in my top five favourite Reading goals ever.
And his cross against West Ham. That was a fantastic cross that was.
Yeah. Is that the socks up game?
Mm.
Yeah. So we've answered that one. Thanks very much for that, Sam. Nick Houghton, which we've already asked, he asked us to talk about Harry Robson Canoe, which we've covered. And finally, from Uneven Bounce, do you think we'll spend the Blackman money in this window? A question on the lips of lots of Reading fans. So Dave, if you were putting money on where Reading are putting their money, do you think they'll spend the money this window?
I think they'll spend some of it. I think we haven't looked consistently potent enough in front of goals. We need a ruthless striker. I think somewhere along the line over the next 2 to 3 weeks we'll be forking out on a goal scorer.
Definitely. I don't think they can afford not to, because if the start slipping down the league, the fans stop coming. It's as simple as that. If you're going to sell not your best player, but your top goal scorer, you have to replace him. You've got no choice.
I think Reading will spend money, but I do not think they will spend a total of £3 million in this window.
We'll see.
I think they will go for young, hungry players that have got value. I think to get the top market players, you have to overspend in January. We've seen it throughout the Premier League, throughout this league.
Yeah.
You have to pay more than these players are worth. And I don't see what the value, especially as I said, with running a 33-1 shot, I don't see why you gamble and overspend now when you can pocket that money, look in the summer, and get yourself a much better deal. So, as I said, I think they'll buy a couple of players. Maybe they'll spend up to £1 million on a Bradshaw. Could do. But no, I can't see them break, because spend that money, well, I suppose they could do it in multiple deals, but you know, they spend £3 million on Connor Washington, they're breaking their transfer record, and I don't really see Reading breaking their transfer record this window, not with the position they're in, unless...
And certainly not on a League One striker who's never done it at Championship level.
No, I mean, they'd have to be very, very, very keen on him, and I don't get that impression. But, you know, as anyone who's listened to the past 79 episodes of this show goes, I have been wrong on just the odd occasion. So, again, thank you very much to everyone that got in touch with the mailbag, especially those of you who used hashtag TTE podcast. If I've missed your thoughts this week, I very much apologise. But as I said, I'll try to get as many in with the hashtag as I could. You know the addresses by now, at thetirelessend on Twitter, thetirelessend@gmail.com for your emails, and facebook.com/thetirelessend. Just a few bits and pieces to go. We've got two championship games to preview in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any Other Business.
So just when you think you've seen the last of Nick Blackman, he comes waltzing back into your life like an ex you walk into a bar and find. Except this time it's in at the iPro Stadium in Derby, because Reading travel up there and they will face and presumably a Derby team containing Nick Blackman. Probably not containing Alex Pearce, but he has been in the squad. He did get a rare game. Got a run out in the FA Cup at the weekend against, I think, Hartlepool. They went away at, so you could see Piercy. Don't think you will. But yeah, Reading travelled to Derby, obviously second place in the league, one of the high flyers. They're unbeaten at home since the end of August. That was against Leeds. Their prior home league defeat, Dave?
Reading.
Yeah,
well, yeah,
there you go.
First, the season. Yeah.
So they've lost three games all season, that Leeds game, and one in the middle, and then their most recent game to Middlesbrough. So they're not in the very best of form recently. Obviously, that was a big blow against a big title rival. There's still odds on to get promoted with the bookies. And you look at that team list, Dave, and especially you add Nick Blackman's name to it. It is a fit. You know, we said at the start of the season, when we looked through Championship squads, it still looks just as fearsome now, doesn't it?
Yeah, they've spent £25 million on it, haven't they? The best part of £25 million on it now that they've signed Nick Blackman. They also got the other chap as well. They've brought in, I can't think of his name now, played the weekend. I forget his name, but as you say, they've got it's just packed with top end Championship quality. Lee Grant, Jason Shackle, Stephen Warner, Richard.
Bradley Johnson.
Chris Martin, Tom Ince up front. You're looking a very potent strike force. Andy Wyman.
It's the bench for me, and this bench. I've taken this from their last league game. That bench of Bent, Mitchell, Baird, Pearce, and Shotton. And the two that came on, Hendrick and Vyman. Any of those players, I would hazard a guess, would walk into Reading's team right now. Maybe not Mitchell or Hendrick. But you know, to have Darren Bent sat on your bench, the player who went for, what is it, 30 million a couple of years? No, not quite that many, 20 million a couple of years
16
ago.
16 and a half million, wasn't it?
Too much.
It was the same season that Thierry Henry went for 16 million to Barcelona.
Yuck. Yes, so a fearsome bench, Westie. One of the strongest teams in the league. To give Reading any hope in this one?
The sort of game Reading to go and get some out of. We say it all the time. They've got a great record at Derby over the last 5 years or so. I think we very rarely get beat there. But again, Derby down here, I thought they were a good side, even though we got a good result against them. They're always there or thereabouts, aren't they, every season. You think at some point they've got to get promoted. So yeah, this is going to be a tough game for Reading. Real tough game.
Yeah, and after that, they go to a team at the other end of the table. They take on the McDons, our very first trip to Stadium MK for a competitive game. And they're in a bit of trouble. They're 20th in the table. Their last 10 has seen them win 3, drawn 2 and lost 5. You look at their team and you sort of contrast it with Derby's. And again, it's not a lot of household names. I mean, you know, Baker's, Potter.
Ironically, it's the sort of game Reading lose.
One name obviously stands out is one S. Church.
Oh yes, the goal machine.
Yeah, guarantee scored against Reading last season. So, but yeah, again, we've said it. Sadly, too many times this season, but if Reading have got any playoff ambitions, it's the sort of game they need to go and win. They need to break that away hoodoo. And there's going to be few games where you're as likely to get a result than the MK Dons.
No, you've got to win them sort of games. Again, it's the sort of game that Reading will go and get beat, though, and probably turn Derby over.
Dave?
Pretty much that is Reading away, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it's going to be.
Well, without further ado, then, let's get on to the bit of the any other business that matters, that being the prediction league. Now, obviously, Cup games don't count, which is a good job because all of us predicted Reading defeats, including Charles Watts on the podcast extra. So that doesn't count, but now this one does. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I'm going to say Derby 2-1.
Derby 2-1. Dave?
Yeah, we always give them a game up there, don't we? I'm just looking at, just very quickly writing down our results up there. We've won on 7 of our 11 league games up there.
Very nice. So we've got a good record up there.
We've only lost 3, haven't lost there in the league since 2009-10.
Is that Shane Long getting sent off?
It was Shane Long getting sent off, yes. Yeah. We took the lead in that, Gilfie Sigerson as well. I can't see anything other than a defeat in this game, though. They're just far, far too strong. I'll go 3-1 Derby.
Right, I'm saying 2-0 to the home side as well. Can't see Reading scoring in this one. I will get the thoughts of Johnny and Charles on that one. And as we're not going to be doing a show for the MK Dons, let's move on to that. I'll go first for a change. And I think we are going to win this one. I think we're going to win 3-1. Dave?
2-0. Win.
2-0 to Reading. So that's a 0-2. And Westie?
1-1.
One, one.
Sticking with my negative theme.
There you go. Yeah, well, we've all gone negative again and only got a positive result at Huddersfield, so that does it. Anyway, that just about wraps up the show, so thank you to everyone who got in touch this week, and again, a massive thank you to anyone who has helped contribute to the crowdfunding campaign. Again, get your obscure Reading 11s in. I said we'll try and read the best of them next week. In the meantime, plenty of content up on thetarlhurstend.com. I said you can read Mark's report and ratings from Huddersfield. We'll also have a report from Derby and from the MK Dons as well as lots of other pieces. There's been a good couple of opinion pieces, but I do say so myself because I wrote one of them. Are Reading an ambitious club, taking a bit of a forward look on a piece that John Keane wrote a few years ago. A lot of similarities there. It always comes along when Reading sell a player. Are we an ambitious club? So go and have your say in the comments there and vote in the poll. In the meantime, I said thank you very much to everyone who's listened and downloaded, and especially those who subscribe. We're all off. We'll be back hopefully next Monday, I'd imagine. Maybe Tuesday. I don't know. We'll talk about this off air.
Cup draw tonight as well.
There is. Do you want to quickly predict who we'll get? We are recording this at 6:11.
Oxford.
You reckon we're getting Oxford?
No, I don't, but it would be good.
Who do you think we're getting?
Let's say Oxford.
Okay, it's saying Oxford.
All right. Hope we get Oxford. We won't get Oxford. We'll probably get someone like Chelsea away.
Are Burnley still in the draw?
Are Cardiff still in the draw?
Burnley lost at Toll. Cardiff lost.
That's a bit of luck. We won't get them then.
Luckily, we can't get Huddersfield.
Be another championship. So we get a champion side all the time, don't we? It's probably be another championship side.
Derby away.
Derby is another poor.
Yeah, I'm going to say that because they're in the draw.
Holloway?
He's not managing anyone. I'm going to mix it up. I'm going to say we're getting Derby at home.
Okay.
So there we go. So Oxford, Derby at home. And what did you go for? Oxford.
I'd like Oxford. I don't think we'll end up with a crazy draw like Chelsea. I'd like Carlisle as well.
Chelsea would be good. I wouldn't mind that. No, now that we're in the Championship, I don't mind getting
Prem
teams.
That's a good draw.
I wouldn't want it.
Really?
I wouldn't want Chelsea. No, I want a chance of progression.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, last season people were whinging and moaning about the fact that we kept on drawing Championship clubs. Well, we kept on winning and we kept on progressing.
We did,
and
yeah.
We got to the semi-final.
Chelsea at home, could turn them over.
You know, you can only beat what's in front of you.
Yeah, very true. Anyway, you can see if we're right in probably around about the time that this hits the airway. So again, thank you very much. In the meantime, all that remains to be said is come on, you arse.
Social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.